the window back to report that we're about to start. It's a Bando Factory podcast, and it's about to start. Come in, Manchester Punk Festival.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
Yes! Hello, Manchester
Punk
Festival!
Hello, Manchester Punk Festival!
Punks,
My name's Henry Raby.
My name's Natalie Quatermass, and together we are Vandal Factory. So if you don't know us, we are artists and activists, and we have a podcast where we talk about art and activism, and it is an absolute pleasure to be with you today on a Saturday afternoon.
We'll edit that out, don't worry, we'll re-edit that bit.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today. We are recording, and you can find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So the first question we ask ourselves at the start of every podcast is, how's your hope? And how's your anger?
Yeah, these are the two fuels that keep us, our activists, going. So, Henry, how's your hope? How's your anger?
I'm pretty hopeful, mate.
Yay! Because
I went to see Martha last night.
Yeah, did anyone else go to see Martha last night? Oh, lovely. See, we're all friends here.
And I shaked my little booty. And I danced my little socks off.
Great.
And I got sweaty.
Good, good.
Which is what I do when I dance to Martha.
Yeah, and just every other day as well.
Every other day, just being
sweaty. Me and Henry
are best
pals. We live next door to each other, which is ideal. We have our own space, but you know, popping in distance, which is lovely. And I can confirm he's sweaty every day, even if he's not dancing to Martha.
Do you know what's great about Martha? I just want to say this. Martha's the sort of band where I can watch them play for over an hour and then walk back to the hotel going, I really want to listen to Martha. I really feel like I just want to pop. But they're not here. Oh, I'll tell you what though, I was annoyed because Nathan was like, all the bands are really good. Didn't fucking mention the Poetry Comedy podcast stage, did he? So fuck them. I didn't realise they hated Comedy Poetry podcast so much. Nathan has actually been on the podcast.
And your anger, apart from that?
We're gonna get angry.
I'm very angry. There's lots to be angry about, isn't there? There's an awful lot to be angry about. Furious, I'm sure everyone here has had lots of long, dark nights of the soul going on here. But then, after the long, dark night in the soul comes the anger. And anger, we turn into action, we get busy, and then we get hopeful. I'm a strong believer that action, you know, if we do it because it's good, but also we do it because it's what keeps us sane, half the time, half sane anyway.
Should we ask these guys?
Yeah, we'll ask you. What gives you hope? What gives you anger? And as an extra incentive, don't worry, there's some people who are like, oh my God, audience participation. Don't worry about it. We're not going to force ourselves on you. But for an extra, we've got a gift. We've got prizes for anyone who wants to tell us what gives you hope, what gives you anger. We've got a zine.
Zines.
I'm going to give you the Vandal Factory zine.
Do punks like zines?
Yeah. I don't know. Do punks like zines? You tell me. I'm just a punk tourist, really. I'm more of a hippy dippy chick.
You and your
like,
Grace Petrie
t-shirt. I know. More folk punk, to be honest. But anyway, it's fun to play dress up, isn't it? Who wants a zine?
So for the listeners at home who listen to this podcast in future, everyone immediately put their hands up with enthusiasm.
And they're just so well behaved that they did it in silence. Everyone was just like, yes, I would politely like a zine, please. And I'm happy to tell you what makes me angry.
Oh, wait, Jay, our sound engineer.
Amazing! So, Jay, in order to get this precious zine of the Vandal Factory podcast, you have to tell us what gives you hope and what gives you anger.
What gives me hope? I don't know.
Use the mic, you should know this.
What gives me hope is just like binge watching retro gaming videos, stoned. That gives me hope. And what gives me anger is, I don't know, running out of weed while binge watching retro gaming videos.
Two sides of the same coin.
There we go, thank you very much. Thank you. Anyone else, what gives you hope, what gives you anger? Come on.
People, my crew from the Poetry Love stage, come on, what gives you hope and anger? Shout it out.
Go to them, Henry, go to them.
I'm going to go to them.
Go to your people.
If I'm not too... This is as far as I can go.
You can go a bit further.
Come on, Ross MacFarlane, one of the greatest poets Scotland's ever produced. What gives you hope, what gives you anger, my friend?
am very hopeful about the fact that this little crew of folk that we come to Manchester with every year is growing bigger and bigger every year, and that is making me very happy right now, and I'm very angry at this hangover from last night.
Yes!
It's almost like community is a good thing.
Come on, I don't believe that there's not more pissed off people in this room. Tell us what pisses you off.
This seems worth it.
If someone doesn't say transphobia right now, I'm ending
room full of transphobes right here.
Come on, shout out transphobia and have a Z.
Transphobia.
Yeah, right. Well, that's our job, isn't it, Henry? By the end of the podcast, in the next 50 minutes, you will be so bursting with hope and anger that everyone will be shouting about it, and then maybe we'll give you a zine afterwards.
Yeah, you're good. You're a nice punk.
What's next?
It's time to welcome our first guest of the podcast. They are, I don't know, legend. Well, you described yourself as a legend today for getting on a tram. Natalie was like, mate, I'm 50 minutes away, jumped on a tram like a ledge.
Yeah, I did.
Leeds doesn't have trams.
It's a very controversial thing. Leeds, like, really envies the tram system. I don't know if you know this, but there's a real chip on the shoulder of Leeds because they don't have a tram system. They used to have a tram system. They were promised to get the tram system back. It's never manifested. It's a big deal, okay? So I got on the tram and was like, I'm living the dream.
If somebody walked in now, they'd be like,
this
is not...
Is
this
transphobic or what?
Oh! Transphobic!
Well,
wow.
So please welcome to the stage the greatest heckler of Manchester Punk Festival, Erica Freya!
Erica, come sit with us first.
Oh, okay.
Come sit, we'll have a chat. On a bench.
Excuse me for being awkward.
How's your festival been so far, Erica?
Yeah, good. Really nice. I've never been to Manchester Punk Festival before.
Whoa.
First impressions?
It's a good vibe. There's a lot of people.
What do you want from a festival? You've done a lot of touring, a lot of festivals. What are you looking for now?
Honestly, it's like I was so excited about running into friends in the street.
Oh, it's lovely.
That's like the main thing I was thinking about. Food and seeing people that I wasn't going to expect to see, like you guys from Finland who just ran into
people from Finland. Hello,
yeah,
people
Maria
from Finland.
And Tony.
Amazing.
But you don't know who's going to be in the like mass hordes of people that come to a thing and then
absolutely,
so excited
yeah.
who you might see.
Yeah.
And as a society, we are a lot more scattered and spread out, which is brilliant because we know people all over the world and that we can connect with them and have amazing relationships with everyone. But there is a joy when we all come together, and especially when there's a bit of like randomness to it.
Totally.
And people you're not expecting. That's super exciting. So we're going to hear some music from you today. For anyone who hasn't heard your music before, what can they expect?
What's your vibe?
What's
well,
your scene? I don't know. Like... I feel like that is a really hard question. Like,
start with the guitar.
I mean, I love to shred, and I also like love to play beautiful like finger picking. I don't know. I just love to play music, and I don't really mind about the genre.
Fantastic.
That's something I was thinking about when I was looking at the lineup, and I like. Your solo stuff is really gentle and folky. It does. If I said to someone, listen to this punk artist, they'd be like, "What?" This,
yeah.
But like, there is punk in there. Do you think about that when you're like crafting and going, "I'm gonna break these like genres a bit," or is it just this is from the heart?
I used to think about it a lot more. I used to be in a band called Reviver that I toured a lot in. And when I started playing, like, the band came first, and then I got brave enough to start doing solo stuff. So at the beginning of doing solo stuff, I was like, well, I better make it punk, because punk is valuable. But guess what? It is, but it isn't valuable. You can be soft and be just as powerful as being, like, really loud and yelling. And then when you're talking about, like, what is my vibe, I think my vibe used to be really fucking angry and wanting to change everything. And I still want a better world than the one that we live in, but I see how things have changed a lot in the last, like, 15 years of my life, and it makes me feel really hopeful. And I feel less like I need to be the one, like, being like, change that, and more like, hopeful about just like kind of, I don't know, like more calmly moving into action together and trusting that we're doing that and noticing that we're
being the change, being the change in your own life and in your own community. That's what I can see your brain.
Yeah.
Forgive me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but yeah, it seems like you're manifesting the change in your own life rather than attacking it.
Yeah.
But I think that is a form of anger. I think anger can look like lots of different things, and people often think that anger has to look a certain way, and you can have calm anger.
Yeah, it's
you
nice.
Can have smiling anger. I often have the smiling anger. You can see it in my eyes.
Well, and also I think that the thing that I do in my life now is I'm an acupuncturist. I've trained to become an acupuncturist. And what is rad about acupuncture is that it's about creating space. So, like, it's about giving perspective and creating space so that you can, like, have a different relationship with your moods, your pain, your PMS, whatever the thing is. And I feel like that with anger. It's like all the things are still here. The transphobia is still here. The, like, seemingly horrific and uncrumbleable empires are still here. But if you step back with perspective, there is crumbling going on, and there is expansion towards, like, safety for, like, more, there's safety for being more, what am I trying to say? The change is happening, it's just that it's also not happening at the same time, but you can find it if you're looking for it, and that is hopeful.
Absolutely, yeah. The we'll look at is here now. We're creating pockets of space where we can all come together and create the communities, create the spaces that we want to create.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing that all the time. And creating space, whether it's in the body and in the mind, or a literal space of rooms and festivals, we're doing that. And that's absolutely something to be hopeful about.
Yes, and like, there's often like many trans people in a room now, where it used to feel like if you were occupying that space, you were one. You know, or like, there is change happening, even though the anger, the desperation, all of those feelings are still very real and valid, and they do feed into action. And also, I think it's so important to notice that things are different than they were 15 years ago, or 50 years ago, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're gonna play one of the tracks for us.
Yes.
You said to us, can I play one about the its insignificance of the human perception against the vast void of the universe? And I was like, yeah, sounds banging.
May I play that one?
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about it before we crack on, or do you want to just let it speak for itself?
I'd love to, because it involves name-dropping Rachel Carson. Anybody know the author? She wrote Silent Spring.
And for people listening to the podcast, everybody put their hands up.
And also, some people were crying. Rachel Carson, she was a writer and an activist, an environmental activist, and a queer woman, although that is like read between the lines in hindsight style. And she wrote a book called The Sea Around Us, that is the name of this track, that is about the history of the planet Earth. And my dad gave it to me, and I was like, ugh, science book, like, I don't know how to read science. I was probably like 35. I didn't realize I was going to end up loving science later. But I read the book, and it was so poetic that it gave me like entry into thinking about, you know, like we grow, the way that our culture separates us from history, like that we are living in the present moment and history is a thing that happened. So those hard things that happened when we were doing bad things, for instance, I'm from the United States, you know, like when we were like perpetuating colonialism and like the horrific things that built that crumbling empire, that's in the past, but we're living in the present. And I think that that is so, it's so silly when you think about the planet Earth, because we are such a drop in the bucket of time. So anyway, I'm talking too long. The point is that like thinking past a human lifespan, or like intergenerational human lifespans, creates space because then it's like we think that the world is this way within this culture that we have right now. We think a certain way about our bodies, about our identities, about like what is race, what is gender, what is class, and all of those are constructs, and they don't exist in the vastness of the planet. They exist in the shortness of this society that we currently live in and consider reality.
I think it's so important, and especially in the context of thinking about the climate crisis, and forgive me, I'm not going to be able to remember the name of this teacher, but they were indigenous to New Zealand and speak a lot about indigenous wisdom in regards to nature and the planet. And the phrase that always sticks in my mind is them saying, this is an emergency, we need to slow down.
Yes!
And the idea being, stop thinking of the climate crisis being something like an impending wave of doom that's coming. No, it's happening, and it's been happening for centuries, and for those people that have been paying attention to the land, that are connected to the space that they live in, that this earth that we happen to be on, that's been visible and apparent for generations. And they were thinking in terms of the generations of a tree that can be hundreds of years old.
Yes.
And the roots can be hundreds of years old. And thinking in those terms, like way beyond the human experience. And when, you know, especially in like today's politics, when we tend to think like week to week or day to day, or, you know, year to year, term to term, and actually stepping back and being like, we are this tiny, tiny, tiny drop in a vast ocean. I think getting a perspective on that can be a source of great calmness and creating space, and really effective for change.
You know what else is, it surrenders the individual requirement that you or I be the one that creates the change, and instead almost like commits us to the generations that are coming and the generations that are before. You have to let go of this individual, like, I've got, you know, like 20 to 80 years on this planet, so I better have my legacy, and it's got to be about me and my name. And it's like, no, it's about what
of a collection.
Yeah, and all of your effort is valuable, and it's not about you, it's about what's coming.
I tried to Google the quote, but I couldn't find it. So if you know who said that quote, you can email vandalfactorytheatre at gmail.com.
We'll drop it into the edit and make me sound like I just knew it off the top of my head. Yeah.
I think it's time for some music, Erica, if you would like to serenade
us.
So
that's what this song is about, yeah?
Sure.
Great.
Okay.
Folks, can you give a huge round of applause for Erica Gray?
Thanks for coming here this morning to listen to us talk. Okay, let's see. I'm just gonna jump into it. For a long time, we were coasting on fumes, it didn't matter. To the view out from the front lines with nothing to lose. The world got longer, the world got longer. I read an author, she was born in the sky, died not long after, in the context of time and in the middle. Had a beautiful mind and it spilled over, it spilled over. Would you shine when you get up to fight? Would you win faster by dimming your light? We'll all get smaller till we all disappear. If we hide our bright out of some distant fear. We're
We're separate in store, but deep sea mountains. How are they formed, and do they too start to die? From the moment they're born, the world is changing, always has been. Would you shine when you get up to fight? Would you win faster by dimming your lights? We'll all get smaller till we all disappear. If we hide our bright out of some distant fear, yeah, we'll hide our bright, but it'll just be from fear, from fear. Now that's different than the one we talked about.
Okay.
And this one is about feeling utterly suppressed and then realizing that you actually held the key to release from that suppression. Like getting out of the world is happening to me and realizing that you've got agency. That's what the song is about. And it's about me doing that. The first steps were a walk in the light. The next few tore the day from the night. And there needed to be waves, but they grew so big in size. Scattered my body across the sky, and I won't be undone. I turned my back on the sun. Simple, but the simple truth was that I turned my back on the sun. Came a cloud of crystals, catching starlight. Before I was aware, I could control myself. Move through my mind in the dark night, 'cause I could barely speak. And I ate all my gums and my tongue and my teeth. Laying under hard, 'cause they were shut so fucking tight, and I wanted to be brave, and I wanted to be right, and I needed to make up my fucking mind, 'cause I am the one. When push comes to shove, who knows my every angle and the depth of damage done? So I turned my back on the sun.
is playing in Cosmic later today, and also doing a solo set as well. So please go check out Erica's band and solo stuff. And can we give another huge, massive round of applause to Erica Brown?
Thank you, thank you.
So we've got another guest coming up in a moment, the wonderful Liv Winter. But before that, well, that was a bit loud, sorry. That was a bit but before that, I'm going to read a little poem. So it is tradition on the Vandal Factory podcast that I do my own thing, because I'm an only child and I like doing my own thing. So that includes reading a poem. So, but we don't have the jingles here, so what I'm going to do is ask you after three to shout, Henry does his own thing! One, two, three!
Henry does his own thing!
Great, we'll turn that into the next jingle. So if you don't know, I also host the poetry stage that happens here between 2:30 and 3:30. So I wrote this little poem about that. Welcome to the punk poetry stage, 2 foot 6 feet of amplified rage. Human pyramids pile up like similes. All my rhymes are stuck in a circle pit. I didn't want to write a knockoff John Cooper Clarke poem. I stopped doing that when I was 16, realised it was going nowhere. But still, I thought I'd give it a bash. The fucking poetry stage is fucking great. The fucking poets are fucking ace. The fucking girls and fucking guys and fucking non-binary types. The fucking bloke bought a fucking book because he fucking fell in love. The fucking bands at fucking Gorilla are all simply fucking vanilla. Spoken fucking word you should embrace. This is the fucking poetry stage. Believe me, look beyond the Google hits of JCC, because we are marauders with morose scolder for order. When BBC Six Music had a taste for sing-shouting artists like Yard Act, will give me the fucking record deal. Because we're standing against turf poets who claim the punk tag. We spit words like paint, like a Van Gogh. Okay, that sort of rhyme didn't really work, because I tried to say Van Gogh, as you're meant to say it, rather than Van Gogh, which is how my, like, Yorkshire dyspraxic tone would say. But you get that it works written down, so don't worry about it. Turn your setting somewhere between nihilism and couldn't give a toss, between the hopers knowing it gets harder to trust in these chords, to the triumphant scum. Behind us are a few decent English teachers and rhymezone.com, because we are here and we're sharing and we're taking over space in the sandbag, where we know this means everything to face the future that we're holding as poets together standing. Never mind the guitars, this is the fucking poetry stage. Thank you very much. Cheers. And with that in mind, can you please welcome to the stage one of those said poets, the indomitable Liv Winter!
Thank you. This is such a funny setup.
Yeah,
us all next to each other.
It's
hi,
a bit
hi,
it's
hi.
Tense,
yeah,
it's
got a bit of a weird polyamory feel. how are you, Liv?
Good. I think we're all right.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a live podcast.
I'm in like mode of like, just keep swimming.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
It's gonna be fine.
Yeah. How about you? How's your festival been so far?
Yeah, it's been nice. I played a show yesterday, not at the festival, but at Islington Mill, which is like a fun artsy space. Whenever I'm in a new town, I try and always play a trans surgery fundraiser, and because there's so many people that need it, there's always one. So last night I played one by a collective called Bye Bye Bangers, which was really fun, and then I came and met up, I'm staying with my friends, menstrual cramps, and yeah, it's fun. I'm sober, so, and I'm kind of like day 35 today, 5 weeks
wow.
today, which is like fun, but also yesterday I was like, this is really testing me. but yeah, no, it's nice. It's really nice to be around all the punks, as always.
Good for you. Look, the world, it must feel like a very strange and new experience.
Yeah, I guess so. I was sober before for like 7 months, but then we're back to it. I work in nightlife. It's quite a hard world to be sober in. And also, I don't know, I've done a bit of rethinking about it recently. I'm very much an anarchist, and I read a really interesting text about kind of, I guess this is maybe what a lot of straight edge people think and feel about, but just like anything that society decides should govern your life, you should probably think about. And that was kind of a bit of a light bulb in my head, where I was like, oh yeah, that's interesting that I spend so much time drinking and partying, not all of it's fun, and that's just what's expected of me in my life, and I'm not really questioning that. So yeah, it's all right. It's quite boring sometimes. My body is not yet a temple. I keep waking up still tired, so that's a bit of a scam. And I don't go to the fucking gym, so
yeah.
That's it really. But yeah, it's nice. I recommend everyone have a go.
Has any of that come into your artwork yet? You were saying before we started, you're a jack of all trades. You're a poet, you're a musician, you're a theatre maker. tell us, for people who haven't seen anything that you've done before, what can they expect?
Yeah, so I've been performing and doing stuff for like 10 years, do a bit of everything. At the moment, the main project I work on encapsulates all of that. So I run a night called How to Catch a Pig, which is like a anti-state violence night in Deptford, and we work with punks, and we work with hip-hop artists, and we work with sex workers and drag performers and kind of just anyone who's told no. We get them on stage, but how it works is I kind of like curate this show, and it has like narration through it and sometimes music that moves through it. So it's a bit like if a punk night out was a musical theatre production.
Amazing.
So yeah, just basically I like to do things that bring together lots of different people in the room and lots of different people in the audiences. I used to do a lot of musical theatre, dare I say it. I wrote a play about like the history of anti-fascism. I had like a two-tone covers band in it, and so it's kind of like tricking people. We're putting on a play, so then the play people come, and then you're like, but there's a specials cover band, so then like those people come, and then you're like, and also, you know, there's a drag queen in it, and then those people come, and before you know it, everyone's arguing. It's great.
It sounds absolutely amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun.
Liv, so your politics seem absolutely, for me, spot on, right? And you're not afraid to throw that into, and I think in the moment there's a little bit of people tiptoeing around stuff and everyone sort of being a bit extra careful. Mm. I just wondered where those politics come from, like has it grown over time, or did you like find the thing and be like, right, this is my life now?
Yeah, I'm from a very working class family and we didn't really discuss politics, and my dad also was a builder with aspirations of grandeur. I think he thought he was one paycheck away from Bill Gates rather than like Oliver Twist. And so it was kind of a weird experience growing up working class, growing up trans, not really knowing what that was, not really having the language for it, not really, a lot of unknowing. And then I went to Goldsmiths, which is a famous art uni in London. I was expecting to meet lots of other kind of, you know, Jack the Lad types, and actually everyone was just very rich. So that was quite isolating and strange. And during that time I had a lot of issues with homelessness and domestic violence, and I, you know, kind of found myself in all of those tropes and traps. And I started doing poetry as fundraisers for different things, but at the time still really didn't consider myself politically engaged. But I was doing a lot of fundraising for a collective called Sisters Uncut, which campaigned against cuts to domestic violence services throughout the UK from an abolitionist perspective. So their theories are around not more criminalisation, but changing the frameworks that lead to violence. And yeah, I got a phone call from them one day being like, and I'm very sure to this day it was a wrong number, got a phone call from them, can you come to Peckham in like half an hour? Yeah, great, see you there. And they turned up and they had occupied a building, and I moved in and I lived there for like 8 weeks in this feminist social centre, and then I came out a lesbian, so it worked. The movement worked.
It's a pipeline, right?
It's a motherfucking pipeline, and I was riding that. But yeah, that was kind of where I was radicalised. I think I was always very, a very political person, but I didn't know anything about politics, and I didn't think politics were for me, and they were kind of almost a site of fear, you know. I felt stupid and I had red marks and I hadn't done all these things, and all these conversations happened above my head, but actually the life I was living I think was very political. And now even more so, you know, post kind of the communities I'm in, we've always been in very vocal solidarity of Palestine. And I, at the end of last year, when the genocide really took away, last year I lost £2,500 worth of work from cancellations. We can't work with you, it's too risky, it's too difficult. And yeah, things are starting to level out a little bit now, but I think in the arts community, like you say, a lot of people are learning the hard way now that you actually can't, people now in the audience are more inclined to look and see whether you are saying anything. Like, at least if you're saying something, we can know whether we like you or not. But people are no longer happy to just, oh, that's my favourite band, but they don't really talk about anything. You can't do that anymore. Like, do you
science
give a fuck
compliance
about... Yeah. Do you care about trans people? Do you care about Palestinians? And is that, and is your care about that actually very wishy-washy and tokenistic? People are tired. We don't have enough time to pretend that everything's fine. We want to see our anger and our passions and our care represented on the stage.
Without further ado... That is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I want to hear some poetry.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And so does everyone else. I'm not
just you. Everyone else is like, really?
For the listeners at home, everybody put their hands up.
Such a well-behaved audience.
I figured it's such a
hungover audience.
Yeah. Join the sober circuit. Don't. It's a lot. I thought I would read the introduction from the very first How to Catch a Pig. So I play a bit of a ringmaster role there. And I always open it with a little...
Please take the stage.
Oh,
be the ringmaster.
You're so right. Let me get up here. But this is the opening from the first ever How to Catch a Pig. You're invited here today to witness something called scratch performance. That means no one had the time to practice. That means no one had the time to think too deeply, but everyone knew that they wanted to say something. An informal showcase of ideas, of empty threats, and the occasional plea for funding. The performers today have been brought together to wrestle with the challenging provocation, how does one catch a pig? These artists have found themselves on each other's radar due to a commitment to grassroots organising and the potency of subculture as a weapon. Together we can organise. What is a revolutionary practice? How does one make art not just outside of the state, but actively against it? How much money do I need from the Arts Council to set fire to a police car? Every night. For a 1 month run at Edinburgh Fringe. What happens when you burn all the Arts Council bridges? It might look fun being provocative and punk, but heed this warning. I am the result of what happens when you use Arts Council funding to make anti-fascist propaganda. You will find yourself, like me, condemned to the streets of New Cross, surviving solely on craft beer. There is a spectre haunting Europe, a spectre called DIY. The mantra has always been, may the bridges I burn light my way. And I think it's fair to say, it's looking a little smoky. We have an unhealthy obsession with dismantling things, so perhaps here today we are able to build. For every institution that we burn to the ground, let something, of course, grow in its place. If no one had decided that plays happen in theatres and gigs happen in the pub and your friends hang out in the club and you fight people on the street, then where would you choose to put those things? What if this audience becomes a place where you can make a pact or a promise, a threat? What if you can organise here together? What if, what if, what if? What if, every year in theatre, somebody, someone, somewhere retells the story of Antigone, twice a year, maybe even three times if you're lucky, and we watch this woman suffer every horror on the earth, such is the intention of the arts. It is a site for the torture of the marginalised, while the middle classes toss back their heads and laugh. We have become the unfortunate face of catharsis when what we thought we were selling was a story. The institution funds what it can co-opt. Packaged joy, tearful pain. What if we swap Antigone out for a season and replace her with a police officer? What if in this year, 2022, the only people who die on stage are agents of the state? What would that do? What if, what if, what if? Thank you. Can I do it? I want to try and sit down. I've got set later.
I think we have to crack on.
Let's crack on.
Like, sorry, Libby.
Thanks. Do you want me to join you back here? Shall I get out of here?
Yeah, come sit down. Yeah,
but Libby's going to do a set later on the podcast.
Set, three.
So come and see a 20-minute set of pure Liv Winter in.
Hell yes.
Oh, boy.
Give it up for Liv Winter! Oh, my God. Amazing. You've just become my new favourite artist.
Oh, I heard you say that earlier.
Yeah. Sorry about that. And sorry about Henry, who just gets bumped down the line as we go on. Man, that's a hard act to follow, isn't it? I really wish we'd changed the order. Never mind. This is the part of the show where we have a regular feature that's called Nat's Provocation Stations. So I'm doing a practice-based PhD in theatre and environmental justice, and I document my practice through this podcast. So I try and bring whatever I'm thinking about in terms of arts and activism into the space and put it into kind of day-to-day language. And a lot of the stuff is exactly what Liv's just been talking about, and they've done it more articulately, more like just brilliant than everything I'm about to say. So thanks for that. I'm going to make sure I've got both pieces of paper before I start. That's useful. All right, we don't have the jingle, so can I have everyone go, it's Nat's Provocation Station! 3, 2, 1!
It's Nat's Provocation Station!
Oh, lovely, you're warming up now. Great, very nice. Okay, this is my provocation. Most of you, or you might know, that me and Henry have been doing our bit for the Leeds Palestine Solidarity Campaign, the regular protests that have been going on in Leeds. And today, the 30th of March, is the Palestinian Day of Land. And what a day that is. Because of course, we are now in 2024, coming up to 7 months of watching this genocide and this collective punishment unfurl in front of our eyes. Let me tell you that this genocide is not about religion. This genocide is about land. This land that holds such precious commodities that the world's most powerful people are desperate to get their hands on it, no matter what the cost. This land that acts as a base for Western power and control. This land that an occupying colonial state has been expanding into for decades. This land that grew the world's oldest olive trees. This land that is the birthplace of all Judean faiths. This land on which the Palestinian people have tended to the world's juiciest oranges and watermelons. This land that the Palestinian people have been expelled from since 1948 and beyond. This land that Palestinians continue to die for while the world watches on. And so today we honour Palestinian land, and there is still in this country and around the world a deafening silence from much of the artistic and cultural communities. In fact, some of our most influential cultural institutions have gone beyond silence and actually cancelled Palestinian events. Most of you, I'm sure you'll have seen that the Barbican, they cancelled a Palestinian event and some speakers. And so a group of artists and activists got together and they said, let us speak. They took over the space in the foyer. They took their artists, they took the Debka, they took Palestinian music, they covered the foyer in banners, and they said, if you're gonna cancel our voices, then we will bring our voices to you. Solidarity to them. Yeah. And here in this city, Home have recently also cancelled a Palestinian event, claiming that they are a politically neutral space. Ugh, it's almost boring to keep talking about this, that being politically neutral is something that most of us don't have. It assumes that Palestinian stories can exist in the world without being political. It assumes that that is a privilege that, hang on. This is a privilege reserved for the rich, white, straight men of the world and the institutions they run. Most of us don't get to be politically neutral. I'll say it, said it once, I'll say it again. If you are politically neutral, if you are silent, you are on the side of the oppressor. So, what are we gonna do about it? Well, we're all artists, we're all activists, we're all part of a community, so we do what we do best. We get together, we get organized, and we get creative. So I wanna tell you about one specific thing that's come out quite recently, and it's called the culturalintifada.com. And intifada, if anyone doesn't know, means the shaking off of chains. That's all it means. And this movement has come together, a global movement that's been launched as a response to specifically a friend of mine or a kind of colleague who is a producer at the Freedom Theatre in the West Bank. And for 3 months, he's been arrested and detained by Israel under no charges other than being a Palestinian who's a community leader who platforms Palestinian voices and voice stories of cultural resistance. And so people around the world are saying, what do we do? So a group of artists have got together and come up with a solution to that. They've organised and put a huge amount of resources and demands and packs of how to get active, how to get creative on this website called culturalintifada.com. And I'm going to read out their demands and you're going to help me. I need to swap from paper to phone. Give me a sec. So, we are going to say, we're going to do some chanting now. I'm going to go one. You're going to say, we are the artists. Let's try that. One.
We are the artists.
Not bad. You'll get better. Two, we won't be silenced. Two.
We won't be silenced.
Excellent. And then I'll read out one of the demands, and then we'll do it again. There's 14, so bear with me. Hang on. All right. Here we go. These are the demands of the Cultural Intifada. One.
We are the artists.
Two.
We won't be silent.
Uphold the truth. Break the silence. Uphold the truth and let Palestinians lead on history, culture, and lived experiences. One.
We are the artists.
Two.
We won't be silent.
Stand against the killing of artists. Stand against Israel's targeting and murder of Palestinian artists and take action to halt global manufacturing and the sale of weapons. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silent!
Three! End the criminalization and imprisonment of artists. Demand the immediate release of cultural workers imprisoned by Israel and the end of the global targeting of artists and activists through criminalization. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Four, halt the destruction of cultural heritage. Stop the eradication of Palestinian cultural heritage and knowledge through the settlement expansion and targeting destruction, bulldozing and bombing. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Stop stealing and return Palestinian culture. Stop appropriating and stealing Palestinian culture. Return the books, artifacts, and all the objects that have been taken. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Prosecute war crimes. Duh. Advocate for war crimes to be prosecuted in the ICC, including the persecution of artists and the destruction of cultural heritage. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Number seven, respect the right to resist. Stop forcing Palestinian artists to perform acceptably and by demanding they denounce resistance tactics, including the armed struggle and a right which is inscribed in international law. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Open borders and advocate for a free movement. Demand the end to Israel's blockade of Gaza and control of the West Bank borders whilst making international visas cheap and obtainable. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Say no to complicity and join BDS. Join the BDS movement. Say no to partnerships and collaborations with complicit cultural organisations. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Don't take unethical funding. End funding sponsorship from companies, corporations and banks who are using the arts to hide their harmful agendas. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
Number 11, stop silencing Palestinian artists and their allies. Stand up to these cancelling and silencing Palestinian artists and the allies in physical and digital spaces. What?
We are the artists!
Two.
We won't be silenced!
Number 12. Oh, it feels a bit like bingo now. It was the generation game when it was, you know, the conveyor belt. Number 12. We've got fund and pay artists unconditionally. Please? Respect Palestinian artists by paying for work, removing political stipulations and funding, and factor in the additional costs faced. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silent!
Number 13, understand and challenge anti-Palestinian racism. Learn about anti-Palestinian racism and put an end to the ways this manifests in cultural spaces. One!
We are the artists! We won't be silenced!
The final one. End all forms of discrimination. Say no to all forms of discrimination. Racism, religious hate, building an intersectional movement for equality, justice, and liberation for all! One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silenced!
And three is end censorship now, 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 now. One!
We are the artists!
Two!
We won't be silent!
Three!
End censorship
now, 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 now! You got it, you got it! Give yourself a round of applause! Please go and check out culturalintifada.com. The resources are amazing, and as a community, there's not, we've got plenty to be doing, right? But they've laid it out. It's very colourful. They've used big print. It's accessible. It's great. So go there, check it out, and make those demands every day of your waking lives. That's Nat's provocation. Thank you very much.
I can't believe you. Matty, I can't believe you brought politics into punk, actually. Like, it's a real, real shame.
I've just realised that as I was standing here, this sort of guitar mic was sort of like at womb level.
Was turned down anyway.
Right, okay. So if my ovaries were like grumbling, that's why everyone could hear. Anyway, thanks very much. I'm going to sit down now.
We've got a couple of minutes left. I guess I'll just ask you, Liv, you've posted recently a big list of how to boycott, and all the festivals as well. There's, lots of artists have been pulling out of festivals. Is there anything you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, I guess it's not just the responsibility of the artists to do this work. There's also so many ways that as audience members you can be contributing to movements and like feeling part of that. And one thing I encourage you all to do this year basically is like anything you're going to go to, gigs, festivals, whatever, you can just type the event in and type in partners, and it will come up with everyone that's funding that, everyone. And you'll be able to see whether your festival ticket is contributing to funding genocide. If you look at the BDS campaign, there's a really clear grid with everything on. You'll find that Barclaycard are sponsoring loads of stuff this year. They are not just super contributing to the climate crisis and to Palestine, but they also funded slavery. Like, that history goes really, really, really far back. And so if you're with Barclaycard or you're going to a Barclaycard sponsored event, chip it off, go somewhere else better, you'll have a better time.
It's that easy to do as well. You can there's a group in Leeds that go and stand outside Barclays and just tell people how they can change. So like every day they're just explaining what Barclays is doing and saying, oh, you just need to go through these steps, go in there right now and change your bank account. And then so it's like tens of people every day that are like, yeah, all right, I'll go do that, fine. And then it's they're being defunded, it's happening. But I loved everything you were saying was spot on and brilliant. And I particularly enjoy, like, I always think it's worth showing up for the intersectional, like the interconnected nature of everything that we're talking about. So I'm banging on about Palestine, but of course this can apply to absolutely everything. It applies to the abolitionists, it applies to anti-trans, transphobia, it applies to the working class. All these things are interlinked, and doing exactly what you're doing at How to Catch a Pig, like bringing all this together, and like a little bit, if I'll like in a more humble way, what the Vandal Factory podcast tries to do by like having different artists and talking about different issues alongside each other, is we're trying to make those connections all the time, be like, this is one fight, one struggle that we're all trying to go for in different ways.
Yeah, and I think it's about knowing that you're powerful. We're powerful. Like, we can do whatever the fuck we want with our time and our money and our day. And like, we don't have to just... This is, what I was saying earlier about sober and thinking about these things. Like, you have every right to question every single thing that goes through your body, into your house, into your hand, and onto your phone. Like, just take a second to really reflect on that and say, I'm autonomous. I don't have to just do what I'm being... That's the punk ethos, no? I'm autonomous, and I will not just be told that I'm just going to, like, nod along with things as they happen. I'm going to ask, where's my bank account? Where does my wage come from? Where do I put down £10 when I get to the club door? Like, all of these questions are important, and I think that Palestine has really brought a lot of them to the surface of people who maybe, capitalism is supposed to tire us out and make it harder for us to have these thoughts and feelings. But I think Palestine has reminded everyone that we have to be thinking about these things all the time and build these things into our life. But yeah, thanks so much for having me.
No, thank you so much.
I'm back here at 3. I'm sure you're sick of the sound of my voice now, but well, maybe I'll see you.
I'm going to plug that after this we've got the poetry stage starting. We've got Shannon doing some poetry after this. And then Sophia Khan and Liv and then more stuff tomorrow. We've been the Vinyl Factory Podcast. Please go find us online, give us a like, subscribe, check out other episodes. We've got loads of punks been featured.
If all of you were to go back and listen to one more episode, that would double our listenership. So please do.
Yes.
Like, please tell your friends. Please advocate. If you've had a nice time, give us a shout. Let us know. It really, like, every comment, every listen means the world. Thank you so much.
It's a fighting uphill against the algorithm.
Yeah, it is.
All right. So, can we have a massive applause for Erica Freyers? Massive applause for you! Yeah. I've been Henry Raby!
We are Vinyl Factory! Thank you very much and goodbye! Can we pop on this song?
What song?
It's 4 a.m. and it's dark and I'm still coming up or going home, or you know, I'm walking somewhere between Dalston and Deptford, and anyway, I've been walking. No coat, no jacket. And that's when I feel you before I see you, coming up behind me. I hear the dragging of your knuckles, I hear the slurring on your jaw. I hear you say, you don't wanna see this shit anymore. You say, you can't escape it. You say, think of the kids, think of all the little children who would be better off dead than like me, like us. Rather be dead than see this abomination. And I sense that frustration and your pace start to quicken as you try and hunt me down. Well, let's just see how that works out. I would like to make something clear. I do not dedicate my time to trying to legitimize our identities. I'm not here to convince anyone that we deserve to exist. I'm here to encourage violence. You picked the wrong one.